We found it exceptionally interesting how difficult it was to acquire one turbine, a commercial grade turbine, because the vendors, the manufacturers are used to selling in large quantities. They're not used to selling one turbine. And so we had to find and work through an intermediary that would talk to the manufacturer, serve as the intermediary, handle the acquisition, and then get it to us. And in the end, we have a 1.65 megawatt turbine. It has become a notable landmark on campus.
It measures just shy of 400 feet tall, with three 135-foot spinning blades that capture enough wind power to keep the lights bright at a college campus, which is what they do. As former Heartland Community College President Rob Widmer just told us, the wind turbine at the college is a highly visible landmark. But the full-sized industrial turbine at Heartland is also a tool for alternative energy education. The turbine also generates nearly half of all the electricity used by the college. This is Random Acts of Knowledge, presented by Heartland Community College. I'm your host, Steve Fast. To get some insight into how the turbine operates and some of the research that is being done into wind power with this unique standalone energy producer, we spoke with a few people that work closely with the turbine, starting with a member of the science faculty.
I'm Janet Beach Davis. I'm the associate director for the science labs here at Heartland, which means I help take care of anything that has to do with any science class here on campus.
Well, how have we been using the wind turbine itself for science classes at Heartland?
Some science classes will go out there just to see the turbine and see how it works, and we'll talk about renewable energy and that kind of thing. So for the classes themselves, it's here and it's a reminder, and so we can talk about how it works. But outside of the classes themselves, we're doing a research study on the turbine. And there are some classes that have been involved in it over the last couple of years, but it's just kind of a special field trip for some classes.
So what do the students have to learn that the turbine has to teach them?
When we talk about alternative energy, it's an example of one way that we can get away from fossil fuels. So we talk about turbines and how they work and what the mechanics behind a turbine is. And we'll go out and look at it. You can't get too close. People are not allowed to go out and stand by the turbine without special permission. So we can stand on the road and we can look, and there's the turbine, and you look at, and you can look at the blades. You can see if it's actually generating just by looking at the blades. So just because it's going around doesn't mean it's generating. So it's good for students to be like, oh, and then when they see a turbine, think, oh, it's generating or oh, it's not generating.
How can you tell if it's generating?
Okay, when you look at a turbine, if the blades on the turbine are bent slightly back toward the pole, toward the base, then it's generating. It has to do with torque on the blades. It curves the blades back slightly. So if the blades are flat, it is not generating.
Sometimes you look at the turbine, the blades aren't turning, and so they're not bent anyway. Does that just mean that there's no wind, or is there a certain condition under which, is it sometimes just not turning on purpose?
Sometimes turbines are off for maintenance. Our turbine has special software on it that we have installed just this season to where when the wind is below 5 meters per second for more than 2 minutes, so when the wind calms down to below 5 meters per second, the turbine blades feather out so that they don't turn. And we've done that deliberately. Now, other ones, sometimes they're down for maintenance. If you look at the wind farm across the road, sometimes they're down for maintenance. Sometimes the wind is just not blowing enough to get it going. So there's a lot of reasons why they might not be turning. Ours will not turn between half an hour before sunset and half an hour after sunrise. If the wind is below 5 meters per second, our turbine does not turn.
Why is that? Why don't we want it to turn during that time?
Well, that's bat migration time. And this time of year is the bat migration, and they're all moving south. And we're doing a study on our turbine for bat mortality. So we're trying to see how many bats get killed by turbines. We have about 3 years worth of data, 2 years worth of good data, and then we installed the software this year. And so now we're collecting data. And because bats tend to fly when there is a breeze, when the wind is blowing, but it's not blowing hard. Nobody wants to fly in a hard wind, and they fly at night. So if we have our turbine, if it's turned off during migration time, then the idea is we're going to kill fewer bats. So that's what the software is supposed to do, and that's what we're studying, is it, does it kill fewer bats?
When it comes to keeping the Heartland campus powered, Bernie Uzinski needs to make sure all things electrical are working properly, and that includes the wind turbine.
My name is Bernie Uzinski, and I'm on the facilities maintenance staff. I've been here for 7 years, and my title and job description is electrician. My responsibility with the wind turbine is make sure it is functioning, for one, just literally functioning, and if there has been a stop in service to diagnose to see if there's a problem with the voltage going down to the turbine to excitate it to start to begin the process of generation, or to find out if it was more of a equipment failure that we would have to call the service contractors in to take a look at for us.
So how much daily interaction do you have with the wind turbine?
Well, it's a great system that we have with that wind turbine that I'm not bound to or responsible to have to check on it every day, but although we do in various forms just to check to make sure the output's correct and the amount of voltage that we send down to it's staying at a maintained level and the voltage coming back is correct, and the amount of power it does provide for the demand on campus is what we're looking for. Really, it's a pretty much a foolproof system. Sometimes the answers are quite obvious. If it's not turning, there may not be enough wind to make it turn, so it can be as simple as that, too.
Can you describe the energy generation process of the turbine?
What we receive from the utility, Ameren, Illinois, is a voltage of 12,470 volts. That comes in our campus, and we distribute that around to the campus to the different buildings, and it's stepped down to 480 volts going into each building and then stepped down again to provide different voltages for different usage. What we have is a conversion that at the base of the transformer, we send the 12,470 volts out to there. It's stepped down to 600 volts. At the base of the turbine is then sent 600 volts to the top where the wind generation equipment up there is first initially a motor. It consumes the electricity to start the spinning process. At that point, once it achieves the correct speed, which can vary at different times because of wind conditions, then it converts into actually generating instead of consuming. So it'll send the 600 volts back down, reversing the direction of current flow, gets changed over to the 12,470 at the transformer, and then we're sending current and energy at 12,470 volts back to our physical plant where we distribute it out there throughout the campus.
At the location at Heartland Community College, how often and how much power is it generating? Is it every day? Is it most of the time?
As long as you see the blades that are kind of arched back, like when you arch your back when you're stretching, if those blades are stretched and it's moving at a good clip, we are generating. Obviously, conditions vary with wind speed and such, and the way they pitch the blades where they turn it to where the face of the blades are garnering most possible air, or if they've pitched them in so they're slicing through the wind possibly where that is not needed as much, the wind generation to keep up with demands.
Does the pitch of the blades automatically adjust? Does it read airspeed? How does that work?
Again, going back, it's a very foolproof system. There's a weather station on top. It knows which direction to pitch the nacelle, which is the cab at the top where everything ties in, to rotate it in the direction of the wind. It knows when wind speeds are extremely high in a thunderstorm or possibly tornadic situation that it pitches the blades so it doesn't pick up as much wind. It freewheels it. It may apply some of the braking system from what I've been led to believe. And when the Washington tornado has been deemed came through town, we went through that when some of the winds were nearby and very high in other cases, and it's weathered through it fine. So it knows to pitch the blades to turn it in the directions it needs to garner the most performance.
So how fast can those blades go?
If you're watching from a distance from that, it looks like the blades are turning very slow, but at the very tip of the blades is they're rotating the circumference of the diameter of the imaginary circle. They're clipping over 100 miles an hour.
When we see the blades not turning, it can be, as you said earlier, it could just be it's not windy enough to get them to go.
That is correct.
It could be that there is some sort of shutdown.
Yes.
Because of an interference in the current to it. Are there any other reasons why we might not see the blades?
Oh, sure. There's for each of we've talked about the blades quite often here. The blades themselves, when they pitch, they have a hydraulic motor that will rotate them or spin them to garner the wind. If a pitch motor on one particular one isn't synchronized with the others. It's smart enough to know that. Say, hey, this one isn't working, whether the motor's gone bad or there's not enough hydraulic fluid to allow it to operate, then it will go into a fault system. And then we are able to go in there and look to see what that fault is and figure out how we're going to approach it.
So when you say go in there, where all do you have to go? That thing's pretty tall. And on the inside, there's a giant ladder. What do you have to do?
For my responsibilities, that all I'm responsible for, my needs are just right there at the base or underneath in the what we call the basement part of it where the cables come in. There's a few checks I could look at down there to make sure everything's happy, but most of the checks are on the first level. I have been to the top when it was a customer orientation situation, but I have no problem doing that climbing. It's very safe. They make it so it's very serviceable and very safe for the people that have to do that. But all my work's down at the bottom. We leave the rest of it that if they go up there to the service company that's under contract with us. But if a need would arise, I have no problem making that 285-foot climb to the center of the hub.
Now, you mentioned that it's very safe. The ladder, though, it's not riveted on.
No, for the continuity of the structure, the metallics involved for the thickness of the walls of the tubing that rises up from the ground, they don't allow any welding or any drilling through. And on that initial climb that I was able to make, it wasn't until we reached the top that the service representative for the company said, we just made the climb and those little blue blocks that are attached to the ladder that are attached to the wall, inside wall tubing, those are magnets. That's what kept you safe all the way up and held the ladder onto the wall. So it's kind of a good little humorous situation once you get to the top and you find that out.
And you realize.
Yes.
So the area around the turbine is restricted. People can't just walk up to it. What are the reasons for that?
During the wintertime, in slow rotating and very extreme cold temperatures and with humidity out there, whether it's from snow or misting rain or such, ice can build up on those blades. And I'd hate to be there on the receiving end of any amount of ice being tossed off that blade.
There are a couple of people that, or a couple of groups, I guess I should say, that are using the turbine for study and research. And I know that there's an involvement with the University of Wisconsin. Can you tell us about how they're involved with our wind turbine at Heartland?
With some relationships that our facility has with the University of Wisconsin, they were interested in planting into the base of the turbine some seismic reading materials, equipment, sensors. When the construction happened, all the wires came up into the base, and then as the turbine was assembled at the base inside, they asked that we had to mount a control box to receive all this data from these sensors. So I had to, there again, talking about not welding or drilling, I had to get somewhat creative with some adhesives to be able to run a raceway for conduits, BU, that encase these wirings to go into that and supply power to it. And what they were doing is taking actual readings of the ground seismic, and they were able to see literally fluctuations in the wind on how it was stressing on one half backside of the ground and base below it and relieving stress on the front half for wind fluctuations. They could tell you when the wind changed speeds with down to what I would believe was what we were told 5 miles an hour. And another interesting fact that after the data that I'd help them retrieve monthly on SIM cards and things like that and send back to them, and they'd send me one to garner more information. From what I was led to believe, the studies that they had and some of the facts that they've been able to prove that actually worldwide, some of the design changes of how the thinking of how the bases are designed to install new wind turbines across the globe have been changed just from information garnered from ours.
This is fairly new technology, and as you point out with this study, there's a lot to learn. That worries some people. Have you seen any negative impacts of the wind turbine?
As far as the personal feelings about this, I understand some people are not on board quite or have all the facts about wind generation and how it could affect the surrounding areas. It all depends how you look at it as far as whether that's unsightly to you or if it, you know, is progress happening, you know, as the interstates were built, you know, and roads were cut through farmland and things like that. People obviously were against that in order to be able to maintain technologies and things like that and keep the lights on as basic as that. We, you know, have to try to find more renewable sources. I understand that there's many, I want to say, urban legends of what effects could be upon a person, and I certainly wouldn't want to discount those factual claims, but I have not experienced any of those that, you know, being around it on a daily and yearly basis.
Bernie, thanks so much for coming to talk to us about the wind turbine at Heartland.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Study and instruction on alternative energy sources at Heartland Community College doesn't begin and end with the wind turbine. And ongoing research into the impact of wind farms on the environment in central Illinois continues. But that's the subject for another podcast. If you'd like to hear it when it comes out, make sure to subscribe to Random Acts of Knowledge, a production of Heartland Community College. Thanks so much for listening.